nuclear time bombs. Holy overeating. Holy roller coasters.
It's time.
It's time.
It's time for the Lion Sidekick Podcast.
Hey, 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 heroes. Welcome back for another episode of the YM Sidekick Podcast. I'm Tom Pounder, and this is where ministers come to get some cool tips and tricks and ideas on how to do ministry more effectively in a very digital and online world. And just in case you didn't know, by listening to the podcast or reading the blog or watching the vlogs on ympsychic.com, I also run a thing called Digital Bootcamp. It's a free Facebook group for all ministers to learn digital tools and insights on how to best reach people in this digital and online world. So if you're not a part of that group, I would love for you to be a part of the group. The link is in the show notes or at ympsychic.com. But through Digital Bootcamp, I've had an opportunity to meet a ton of awesome people. And one of those people is Joe Radosovich. And Joe and I have developed a friendship over the years via online stuff. I actually never met Joe in person, but we've had plenty of conversations about digital and technological things that we can be doing in our ministries to help us reach more people in our local communities or even in our online communities. And so I'm really excited to have Joe back on the podcast, and we're going to be talking about tech trends. On ymsidekick.com a few weeks ago, I did some tech trends for the new year that I saw that were going to be impacting, again, this new year. And Joe and I kind of sit down and talk about those a little bit more in depth, but also Joe adds a few more into it that he's seeing and he's experiencing in his community. So I'm really excited to have Joe on. I'm really excited about this topic. So without any further ado, let's get in the conversation now with Joe Radosovich. All right, with me right now is my friend Joe Radosovich. Joe, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. How about you?
I'm doing good. Glad you're back on the podcast with us. I'm excited about our topic we're going to talk about today. But before we get into that, just give everyone a heads up on who you are and what you do over at your church.
Yeah, my name is Joe Radosovich. I am the only pastor of a small church, Church Replant. Well, my technical title, I think, is senior pastor, but since I'm the only pastor, I always say the only pastor. Our church is Belgium Community Church. It's the only Belgium Community Church in the world. So we end up getting people not only from our area of Wisconsin, just north of Milwaukee, but also people from the country of Belgium who are looking for a church. So I actually made friends with a pastor over there. But yeah, so Belgium is a kind of rural-ish town, but most of the people who live in the town work outside of it down in Milwaukee or in the Milwaukee suburbs. We more of a church plant than a church restart because the church closed its doors, but we do have a 25-year history.
That's cool.
And we're about to celebrate our 2-year anniversary in February. So
that's great. And how far away are you from Milwaukee?
I believe it's 32 miles from downtown Milwaukee.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, because we're surrounded by farmland, it feels really rural. And a lot of the time I actually get ideas from pastors in rural contexts, but we're really not super rural because grocery stores aren't that far away. And, you know, so.
Well, again, you've been on the podcast before, so this is not new. And anybody who's new or listening, you can hear one of his old podcasts. We talked. One of the things I love about Joe is that he's got such a huge heart for tech, and that's a thing for me too. Even though you're not an Apple guy, you know, I love your heart for tech, and so
I would say my heart for tech comes out in the fact that I'm not an Apple guy, but. I will recognize that some people love it. So we actually do use some Apple at our church.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's good. You bucked the trend of, it seems like most pastors are Apple people and it's the cool thing to do to be Apple. So I always love talking to non-Apple people. So
some of it's just because I'm poorer. And so I can get more bang for my buck with Android and I can navigate some of the messiness of dealing with Android, but you don't have all that messiness with Apple. So.
No, that's true. That's true. All right. Well, today we're going to talk about some tech trends, and we're actually going to use my blog post that I posted a little bit ago about tech trends for 2020 that I think churches can use and be aware of and whatnot. And so we're going to hit a few of those. Joe and I are going to go back and forth, but then also Joe's got a few that he identified that we're going to talk about as well that were not in the blog post. So I'll have the blog post in the show notes so you can use as a reference, but I'm just going to start it off, Joe, and I'm just going to let's talk a little bit about AI. AI is not something new.
a lot of us have a Siri or Google Home or Amazon Alexa. I mean, I have a mix of both. I have a lot of Apple products, but I love the Amazon Echoes. And so I have a few Echo Dots, a few Echoes. And so I love both of them. And I really think there's going to be a real use for that. Going into now, we're into 2020 here, a new year, and it's only going to get more. What do you see about AI and some kind of connected devices as some opportunities for ministries?
So I think that voice search, which is, I think some of what you're talking about when you talk about AI, is going to be the biggest ways we see that kind of in our daily life. And I know at our house, my kids will just say, okay, Google, anytime. I'm sorry if I just set somebody's device off. set my own device off. But because I have it programmed only to my voice, we're not like constantly being bombarded with questions and jokes and stuff that they want. But it's just a super easy way for anybody to ask a question. Our family's learning Italian. And so if there's a word we've not studied before, then we'll just, say it out and say, hey, what's the Italian word for so-and-so? And then we can start to use that in a sentence. And so we're actually blending AI into just daily life. And so in the church context, I feel like one of the biggest ways is not necessarily as a tool for us, but as actually a way of us helping other people. Okay. So that if in their daily life they have a question or they have some downtime, we actually want them to be able to use voice search to reach us. So one of the tech takeaways is not necessarily, hey, how do I use voice search to study the Bible myself? But it's to go, hey, if somebody in my community wants to hear a sermon, I need to be findable. So that they can say, hey, turn on a sermon, and then ours is findable. Or if they use it and say, hey, what churches are near me, then we want to be able to be findable in that AI voice search context. Yeah. And so having all of our websites, podcasts, video feeds, all of those things kind of calibrated so that Alexa and Siri and Google can find it and then serve that to people, I think is going to be a critical thing.
Yeah, and we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, but we were talking a little bit about branding and how important it is. You know, again, on the grand scheme of things, your website is so important, but really your overall branding has to be out there more than just your website. So let's talk a little bit about that with voice stuff. And when you're talking about getting your stuff out there, how can we possibly do that with like AI and that?
Well, I think there's a couple of things off the top of my head I think of, and there's a small church near us that I'm going to be helping out here in January, because the reality is if you search for a church in that town, they are fourth of four and Google only shows the first three results. And so one of our priorities is to get them into the top three and really get them into the top spot when Google is searching for a church in a radius around that town, so that if somebody asks a question or does a Google search for a church, that's the church that comes up. I think our church actually comes up for a bigger radius than just our town because we've worked hard to try and optimize the website. Needs to be searchable so that Google can index it. Need your Google My Business result available so that Google goes, hey, this is a priority. People visit it. People look at the photos. People do those kind of things. But then beyond that, I feel like the other branding step that helps with voice search is that people know the name of your church. That because it's used on social media, it's used on a website, you've got videos and those kinds of things available, and the people, and you're using advertising and those kind of things, then the people in your town search for the name of your church. You see what I'm saying with branding, that people are going, I mean, from a personal perspective, if somebody, Tom Pounder, actually people know that name more than they know Digital Bootcamp. And you kind of want both, but you want people to know, oh, Tom Pounder is the youth ministry sidekick Digital Bootcamp guy who makes sure that people are up on that stuff. You want Justin Nava or Jeff Reed. You want those names to be, oh, that's that guy that gives such good, helpful information. So that when I'm searching for information, I go, I want to go to Tom Pounder. I want Google. I want you to tell me what Jeff Reed's newest article is, not just, can you tell me an article on trends? So I think we want the same thing for our churches. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. And I think it really helps out too with brand consistency, is that your branding throughout all your different social platforms or even your website stuff is all the same. Like, you don't want to be known as, I'll just draw out my church, is, we're New Life Christian Church. Well, our branding is NLCC. We used to be NL, the number for me, New Life for Me, because back in the day when we got everything, so when we switched over to NLCC, we had to make sure that all that was consistent, because people have a hard time finding it. Wait, are you the same as NL for me, or is it different? Like, there's a lot of confusion going on. So if you're not consistent in your branding, when someone Google searches it, well, and this in regards to images as well, you want to have your images consistent over the place, so that when they see you on Facebook, it's the same thing that kind of pops up on your website and whatnot. So,
yeah. So I just, well, and some guys are saying basically everything is branding. The video series that you do, and the way that you preach, and the music that you do, and the, you know, ways that you're involved in the community, all of those things build a reputation so that people then go, hey, I want New Life Christian Church because I trust them and I've seen them and I've heard from them. Yeah. When I see a Facebook ad from some random church and I go, I don't even know where that town is at. Doesn't ring in my head later. I'm like, you know what? I really need hope. Obviously I'm a pastor. I'm not actually looking for another church in our area, but he is looking for a church. Like, I want them to go, hey, I've never been there, but I've seen them and they've shown up every year. And so the kinds of things that were involved in our community help build that brand and that reputation so that people go, I don't want just a church. I want to go to Belgium Community Church. I want to, you know, I know Joe, or I know so-and-so that goes there. Yeah. So all of those things, I would say, come into that umbrella. And then by being searchable, voice and AI become our friend as people use those things more and more.
Yeah. Well, I think that's great. Well, yeah. And so, you know, as we look into AI stuff, there's going to be lots of things that kind of continue to grow and develop. We're really just scratching the surface on a lot of these things. It's really become, I mean, again, you get AI on your cars now, you get AIs at home. I mean, you can really start beginning to wonder what you can be doing with AI in your ministries and your churches, you know, as it goes on. So 2020, I mean, we're really just scratching the surface on a lot of this stuff.
Well, and I've heard that, so right now there's the big three, Google, Siri, and Alexa, but BBC is creating their own voice assistant AI that indexes and uses all of their resources, all of the stuff that they publish. And then there's some open source versions and some other things being developed. And some people think that the future is actually not just one, but basically devices that have all of these different AI capabilities and search capabilities, so that you basically draw from the thing that you want when you need it.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, I don't really want to use Google for a Bible question.
Yeah.
Because you end up with Mormon websites and you end up with cult websites and you end up all these things. And I'm like, actually, that's not what I want. What I really want is if there were a ministry that I trust, mm-hmm. that I said, hey, what is the verse so-and-so about, you know, from the Psalms that says this? Yeah. I want Bible.com, you version, to tell me the answer to that. Yeah. Or if I'm like, hey, how do I think about, you know, what's a good article on suicide to share with somebody who's, you know, mourning the death of a loved one? Mm-hmm. Then I don't want it to just Google to do the search. I actually want a ministry that I trust. Yeah. So, you know, to be the one to say, hey, here's an article that we have on that. So the future really could be actually lots of AIs on top of each other, all in one device.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I definitely think there's going to be more and more share of that, which it kind of leads us into, again, cybersecurity. One of the highlights I have on here that I think is really important as we get more connected, and I want to talk about connected devices in a minute, but let's talk about cybersecurity theory. There are going to be more and more hackers out there trying to hack into your stuff, steal your data, steal stuff. So what are your thoughts about cybersecurity and in regards to church stuff? Because again, a lot more stuff that we're doing is being put on the cloud now and, you know, putting up on external servers, not inside your own database. So what do you think about cybersecurity now in regards to churches?
Yeah, well, I'm curious how you do your passwords. Well, and the reason, I'm curious, what do you do for your passwords? Because I'm kind of exploring and experimenting because I realized my own password security wasn't particularly good.
Yeah, I've wanted to do those device, like the One Pass, or I wanted to use one of those things where that I can store all my stuff on there and do it. The problem is I change my password so often, and I rotate through a cycle of variations of a lot of similar ones. I probably have like 7 or 8 passwords that I kind of cycle through, and then I'll alter and change it. But now that I've been changing them more often, I really do have to write them down and keep them in a place because I do tend to forget them.
Yeah, somebody asked me the other day about the Ring hacking, how there's some podcasters on kind of a black website or a dark website that they were hacking into people's rings and like talking to the kids at home and interrupting the nurse and stuff.
Yep.
And which is, they're like, oh man, that's super scary. But the thing is, they weren't doing hard hacking, because what they did is they just basically went to a database of stolen passwords, found some email and password combinations, and just submitted them into the Ring website, and found that the person had reused the same password with the same email login. And so they weren't even doing hard hacking to do that. So I actually think password security is going to become, I mean, that's the real hard part of hacking. It's not all that other stuff. So one of the things I've been exploring this year is trying to figure out the best way to handle that. LastPass and OnePass, people talk a lot about, but you got to pay every month to be able to use them, and that can lapse and stuff. I've been experimenting with KeePass XC, which is an open source one where you kind of hold, basically, I've been messing with it, trying to figure out how does it work? How do I use it in such a way that I use stronger passwords? And I don't store everything in there. I still have multiple accounts that I'm sure a hacker could get into pretty easily, because I'm using good password security from 8 years ago. The kind of thing Wired used to say you should use, but now you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
That's just kind of the way I've been working. But KeePass XC seems, now that I'm figuring out how it works, seems to be a pretty good way to manage that. But in the church context, the hard thing is we've got logins that we need to be able to share with volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we do that in such a way that the password, the volunteers that need the passwords can use them?
Yeah.
And we're not making it so hard for them but we're also not making it so easy. So I imagine it's also probably pretty important that we use physical backups not connected to the internet for things like sermon audio, sermon video, keep good databases of those things, not just trusting YouTube to store our videos and keep them forever, but actually keeping them on a hard drive or whatever those other devices are called.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about the ones that where you'll enter in a new username or whatnot, and they'll give you a recommendation for, hey, you should use this password as yours? Like, I know Apple does that a lot with me. Have you ever done that before?
That's how KeePass works.
Okay.
And so I have been doing that. I really just started with my bank account because I wanted it to be one that I don't use like every day, but it's kind of important. And so if I don't figure out how to do it, it'll be super inconvenient. I'll hate it.
Yeah.
And some of it was, I just wanted to be able to help my parents out with keeping passwords secure and running those things. And so KeePass XC has several really cool layers. You can choose how strong you want the passwords. You can, I won't get into the details, but basically you can use super heavy layers of security and encryption so that somebody would really have to have access to some stuff to be able to access it. But yeah, that's similar to that. I don't actually know my new bank password. It's stored in there because it's a long, complicated string of letters and numbers. And
you know, I actually did that with my blog, because for a long time I had my blog and it was just a regular simple password. And I'm like, it's just my blog. I mean, I'm a nobody, you know? And I'm like, but I end up getting hacked onto a lot and getting locked out. And I finally had to just come up, I had them recommend a password for me. And now I basically just keep it stored in a file that I have, and I cut and paste it every time I need to log in. And that's how I kind of operate. But have you fooled around at all with like the thumbprint stuff and the facial recognition for any of your security stuff?
I have my thumbprint on my phone.
Yep.
I kind of don't love biometric stuff because that's then hackable. Yeah. You know, like somebody can easily get some information and do some stuff with that. But, I mean, I think the future of passwords and stuff I've heard is actually going to be where they are actually evaluating the speed at which you type.
Okay.
And the ways that you do keystrokes, because they can like measure, like, this is a typical pattern for this person. Mm-hmm. And if it starts falling outside of that range, then they go, hey, this isn't normal. This is too fast, or this is too slow, or something like that. And this person usually punches things in at this kind of a speed. So in all truth, on biometric stuff is going to be the future. I think Amazon just filed a patent for being able to use infrared light to blood vessels. And so they'll basically be able to read the blood flowing underneath your skin. So in the future, that is kind of the future of some things.
Yeah. I wish people could see my face right now, because I'm like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I do think it's super important. I mean, because, like things being hacked, things being done in your church's name. I mean, the amount of time that it would take to, fix money stolen out of a church account, and all of that we just don't need that.
Yep.
So,
I agree. Okay, so let's move on then to connected devices, because again, we're talking a little bit of AI, talking about a little cybersecurity. Let's wrap up with this one, with just connected devices. And we can even include like some screen stuff on it, because devices can connect with television screens and monitors. And so let's kind of end with this one on a bang. What do you think for the future in regards to ministries and churches using this?
Well, one of your trends was 5G, and I think we would end up combining 5G with drones and screens and other connected devices. 5G is going to be the thing that actually allows artificial intelligence to kind of come into all of those things and make them smarter and connect with each other.
Because why? Real quick.
Well, because 5G, which I'm not sure the rollout is going to be total this year. I mean, there's different wavelengths that things have to be done on and everything. Be between, you know, significantly faster, so yes, that small devices can be constantly connected and make decisions, yep, with other things. Mm-hmm. Whereas right now, the delay that can happen with either 4G LTE or with a typical internet connection means that like a car can't communicate with another car because there's going to be a delay. But 5G will mean that two cars driving side by side on an interstate can instantly communicate with each other about what they're doing, yep, so they can avoid each other. Yep. So that's how fast 5G is going to be. Obviously, you'll be able to download things faster. I think you talked about that. Yep. But it'll also mean that everything from the robot that vacuums your church to the thermostats in the building to cars that pull into the parking lot to the computers that you use, all of those different connected devices will communicate with each other and can make decisions and can figure out things that need to be done. So that's kind of the promise of connected devices, is everything can be connected. And then we're not like hoping, oh man, what am I going to do with this so-and-so?
Yeah. Well, and we were talking offline too about the vacuum cleaner in your church. I mean, I have a Roomba. Is that what you have at your church, a Roomba?
Yeah. We have to do everything by volunteers because I'm only staff, and it's a lot easier to have people come in and clean the bathrooms, do some dusting, and pick up, you know, straighten things up if they don't have to vacuum and sweep the entire church.
Yeah.
So we just have a little robot vacuum that runs throughout the week, and
yeah. And one thing I like about that is that you can be at your house and you'd be like, oh my gosh, I forgot to set the schedule for the vacuum, and you can actually just hit it on your phone and it'll start going and you can just do it from afar.
Yeah.
So I think that's cool. And we also talked about TVs as well. And again, with the development of TVs and how clear, now again, this is beyond me because I don't have this type of TV, but we were talking about 8K TV coming out and becoming more of a norm. I'm still behind on the fact that I don't even have a 4K TV, so but 8K, yeah, is so developed.
Yeah, so I was curious. I was like, what are we shooting for on TV? I just kept hearing the numbers increase, yeah, you know, 1080p, and then there was 2K, and then 4K, and 6K. Well, from what I understand, our eyes see at 8K. And so 4K is really, really good, but you can still tell I'm not actually looking at something that's right in front of me.
Right.
We use screens in services, and we do video calls, and we can even do video-based small groups, which are super cool and all this. But it always, you know, there's a difference in between what we actually see with our eyes in the real world and screens. Well, as TVs now, 4K is actually pretty common and is dropping down in, some of them are more affordable.
Yes.
You and I don't necessarily have 4K TVs, but a person, but more and more people do have 4K TVs. Okay, and 8K cameras are going to be more and more available. Then video-based stuff, online-based church, those kind of things, there's not going to be as much of a separation. People always talk about VR and AR, but when the camera and the screen basically looks like real life to us, then that, I feel like a lot of the wall of technology is going to be taken away. And so that, that opens up video-based discipleship, kind of starts to, you know, kind of dissolve the difference between online church and real life in-person church. I'm, there's still going to be a hand on the shoulder that doesn't happen, but at least visually, there's not going to be that difference.
Yeah, you're going to feel like you're really super close. And again, with the connectedness of 5G and whatnot, there's not going to be super delay or a lot of buffering either. So if you do do these on these life groups, where whether it's a Zoom call or whether you have a physical life group and then you just open up a chair that ends up being a TV screen where you have other people participate, they're going to feel much more connected than they've ever been before.
Yeah. I mean, I was a part of a discipleship group a couple years ago on Zoom that we were super connected and it was awesome. And I grew a ton and those guys grew a ton. And when we met in real per, in real life for the first time for dinner, it, there was like this connection that like, hey, we've known each other super well, but it's really good to be in person.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize I could connect by video so intensely with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's going to open up, you know, video-based discipleship just because it works better for people's schedules or whatever. I don't think we do it just because we want to do, hey, let's use this technology. But sometimes it's easier to meet at 6 a.m. with a bunch of guys and nobody has to leave their house and they can leave their house to go to work. It's easier to do that maybe than to go and meet at a physical location.
Right. Well, and that's what I like to say when we do online life groups at my church. What I like to say is, listen, life is busy. And sometimes we don't have, like, we rush in to get home at 6 o'clock. And then we stuff down our food and we have to rush out again by 7 o'clock to be at like a life group. Well, this way you can do a life group at your house at any given time without having to leave your house. And so I feel like it provides people more, just another opportunity for them to connect if that's what they really want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause ultimately the point is whether it's in person or online, am I making a disciple?
Yeah.
And some things can be done just fine digitally.
Yeah.
And especially something that's a little more content-based for a season, like there, that can be really, really good and really, really helpful. So.
Well, this is, yeah, I agree completely. Well, Joe, this has been great having you on to talk through some different trends. We could be talking probably for a long time on
this. One more? Make your thing go a little bit longer. One of the things I've noticed and is that as more and more churches can brand well and do graphic design well and things begin to kind of get flat, I've had too many churches on my social media feeds because I just wanted to see what other churches were doing. And I started to realize every church looks the same right now, which is okay because, you know, if we're in different locations, we're going to reach different people and there are those things going on. But as graphic design becomes a commodity, the thing that actually people really want is that personal connection. And so I actually think that in the coming year, churches that win or ministries that win are actually going to be ones that become more authentic and more like, hey, this is who I really am. I mean, I would watch a video of just the behind the scenes. I've had a couple people on ministry working together, talking through, hey, this is what we're working on.
Yeah.
And that just kind of gives an unfiltered view of this is who we really are, not just a slick presentation of, hey, here's our graphic design for this new series. Please come and watch a service. Instead, it becomes a, hey, this is how we developed this. This is what we're thinking. This is what our dream is for this. This is how the Lord is working in us with these scriptures and with this different stuff. I think that that authentic behind the scenes look, often it'll probably be reflected in a show or in a series, whether it's a podcast or a video series, will be the thing that people crave. Because one of the things I've found is I love podcasts. I listen to them a bunch. But the last several nights when I'm doing the dishes, I'll often turn on a YouTube video and YouTube's like, hey, do you want to see this top audio engineer mix a famous, you know, band's album?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a behind the scenes. It's one camera pointed at a famous sound engineer, and he's explaining how he's adjusting the guitars. And I'm like, I don't know who this band is. I don't know. I don't really listen to heavy metal. But to watch a behind-the-scenes look at somebody do something excellent is really, really cool. Or a behind-the-scenes look at this guitar player's collection is just really, really interesting. And I think that for churches, that authentic, you know, not just, hey, this is what we're going to show you on Sunday, but this is what it looks like during the week will be an important trend on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. So,
yeah, I agree. I think you hit on a few different things on there. I think you're right. As more and more churches are getting better at graphics and social and kind of the promotional side of things, I think what people are craving is that they want more authentic stuff. They want to be encouraged. They want to see, they want to learn. And that's why I think too, like what you just said about the YouTube stuff, you know, YouTube is very popular, not just with Generation Z or even the millennials these days. I've found myself going to YouTube. You just say you've gone to YouTube and got this or that. And I think that a kind of a web-based or a video series that you can push on there and just be casual, just be laid back and low-key, I think it's fine. I don't think people need super production quality, you know, content to really appreciate that and really see the authenticity of it. And if there's a real connection that can be made, people can really use it to grow closer with Christ.
Yeah, I just kind of wonder, man, if you go to a church, you know, 2 Sundays a month, 3 Sundays, 4 Sundays a month, a lot of people have questions about what's it like to prepare a sermon. You know, a video or a video series, it's like, hey, this is my preparation process. This is what I'm thinking through. And this is how I panic on Saturday when I'm like, I just don't think that's the right way to say it.
Yeah.
Like people would, I just suspect people would gravitate towards that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That if you're in kids ministry, not just putting on a kids ministry event, but allowing somebody with a video camera to sit in the planning meeting as you kind of go, should we do this or should we do that? Yeah. You know, what about this or what about that? You know, so that we're not just giving people the front end product, but we're putting people behind that saying, hey, this is what our hope and our dream is for these kinds of things. I think people just gravitate towards the humanity of it. And so.
Yeah. You know, it kind of reminds me, as you just been talking about it, is like, you remember the old VH1 series Behind the Music? Mm-hmm. And you know, they go behind the band and what was happening during these critical moments of the band's history and whatnot. That sounds really interesting. I would love to see that played out definitely more in the church world.
If I could go back in time, what I would do is I would video a lot more when we were launching our church. When I didn't know anything and I was new to the community, I think people would have enjoyed seeing, oh, what's it like to start a church? What do you do? You know, hey, day one, this is what I'm doing. You know, day two, I'm trying to figure out like, what is the culture here like? I'm new to it. Let me, you know, understand that. You know, I feel like people would love to see a behind the scenes. This is what it's really like to plant a church, to seek out funding, to be seeking out vision, to be recruiting volunteers, to be, you know, praying for and worrying about a worship leader. Like, I think people would go, that's really cool to see what goes on in that whole process.
Yeah.
So if anybody out there is planting a church or if they are starting a new ministry, I think, and as we begin to dream about campuses or planting churches, but planting churches in other towns in our area, one of the things in the back of my head is we need to video the process because I think people in that community would love to, like, we can trust you because we've seen you talking about what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're not just coming in real slick, like, hey, we have all the answers. You've been asking questions and praying for us and reaching out to us for months, and we've gotten to be a part of that process and watch you. So.
Yeah, that's really cool. There's lots of ideas out there. You should talk with the guys for Passion for Planting, because that would be something that all the church planters they plant or they train, that should be something that they should do. That's a great idea.
Jeff Reed from the Church Digital has been talking about it. I didn't know he's been talking about it for years, but he and I have been talking about it a little bit. That churches plants really should launch online first before they launch physical locations. Obviously cost is lower, but I'm just like, you could easily do a church service or a devotional series and a behind the scenes look for the months leading up to planting. And I mean, 70 at launch is like minimum goal. Like, you know, everybody, yeah. you know, hey, we need to have 70 at that point. It'd be a whole lot easier to get to 70 if people have been able to be discipled, obviously in person, but also online. If curious people have been able to watch videos as you go through the process, yeah. then I come from the sales world before ministry, and people buy from those they know, like, and trust. And in a church planting world, like, people are worried, like, are you a fly-by-night guy? Are you guys going to stay? And video series and a video-based campus first could help people know you and like you and trust you and give you a chance a lot faster.
Yeah.
And so if you did a year's worth of think outside the box of services, you know, whether it's not, maybe not a full service, but a different way of doing that, man, do that for a year, put some advertising money behind that. That would be a great way of launching first. And that's Jeff Reed's idea. And I really hope he was able to push that and people listen and go, you know what, let's try it. Let's not just, you know, put our graphics online and say, hey, come to an event. What if we just take the chance and reach them with the gospel online first?
Yeah.
Then gather them into a building.
Right.
And try and gather them into the building to reach them with the gospel. So I would love to see church plants do that. And as we plant, I hope, I mean, that will be a big part of what we do.
Yeah. Dude, that's awesome. That's a great idea. Well, you kind of transitioned to Jeff and the Church Digital. So why don't, as we kind of wrap up here and you share how people can connect with you, tell us a little bit about what you are going to be doing, because that's a new thing for you. You're going to be working with Jeff a little bit with the Church Digital. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So Jeff started a website kind of ministry. He's been doing some consulting and some coaching and some stuff at a website called The Digital. And he was just really pushing and emphasizing the church online. And he hosts a podcast with Ray DeArmas. And I really like it a lot, because one of the things they argue is that eventually the church online is just going to be the church, in that a physical location and online will be blended. We've been talking about some of those trends here. And so they were having that discussion, and I loved it. Yeah. Just I started having conversations with him about a few things. And he was like, Joe, you pastor a small church. Most of the time, I only speak to church, mega and giga churches.
Yeah.
And he said, would you write some on how some of these principles apply to smaller churches so that smaller churches can reach their communities? Because ultimately, the goal is not to say small. It's, I would say, to be a neighborhood church, that in a circle around our church, we're reaching these people. And Jeff had said, can you bring that approach to our website? And he's invited a couple of other people. I think there's four of us now that are going to be writing for his website. And so I'm just going to be a voice in there for small churches, small to medium sized churches, ways that we can take the stuff that he's talking about and apply them to our context. So that's kind of a new thing that I'm going to be doing in the new year. And he said, it doesn't have to be church online stuff. It can largely just be for small to medium sized churches, largely dealing with digital and online stuff. But my first article really was on how, for a small church, the story brand framework can be a helpful way of taking digital tools and making the most of them. Often we get caught up in, what's the tool that I need to use? And we actually need to have a strategy behind it that makes sense to the people that we're trying to reach. And the story brand framework can simplify a lot of that and may help us communicate clearly with people. So my first article wasn't even on online stuff. It was on how do we make the most of the online stuff with the ways that we prepare and make strategy. So
that's cool. Well, I'm looking forward to reading more of your stuff. I love Jeff's and his blog and his podcast as well. So I'm really looking forward to that. If someone wanted to get a hold of you directly, how would you recommend them doing that?
The best ways are either to go to my website, josephfrudosevich.com. It turns out there is a political staffer who shares the same name that I do. And so it's actually kind of nice to have a website with my name and my middle initial. So Joseph F. Rudosevich, you can go there. But you also can find me on Instagram. I keep that account public so that people who want to connect with me and find me don't have to, you know, figure out, oh, everything's private, I can't see anything. So my website and my Instagram account, JF Rudosevich, Joe Rudosevich, if you search that, you'll find it. That's where I do that.
Yeah.
Those are the best ways to find me.
It's too bad that you're really not on Twitter, but you know, that's okay. I'll just, you know, follow you on your other stuff.
I lurk on Twitter. I feel like Twitter is mostly for journalists.
Yeah.
And so I lurk on Twitter to follow a few journalists, a few subjects that are interesting or just important. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's all good. I like that. Twitter gets me in trouble. I mean, well, I just get sucked in there. I don't post anything crazy, but it is my favorite. Well, Joe, as always, it's great having you on. I look forward to continuing the conversations that we have here. You know, we talk a bunch on Digital Bootcamp too and whatnot. So I look forward to that and look forward to your writing on the Church Digital. So that's great.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I enjoy your podcast. I enjoy the website. And I especially enjoy conversations about trends and hope that that helps other people. You've caused me to think about some things. And so, yeah.
Yeah, this is great. Well, Joe, thanks a lot, man. All right, so there you have it, my conversation with Joe. And I think actually this might be my longest podcast I've ever done. But I think it's a really cool thing because, again, we're talking about tech trends. And every year, well, actually, not even just every year, but every few months, there are new trends that are happening, new things that are happening. And I think it's always good to talk about it. So those are the trends that Joe and I see. What are the trends that you see? I would love to hear your thoughts on it. So definitely get on Twitter and go hit me up at TA Pounder. I would love to hear what tech trends you're seeing that you are monitoring that you think could be helpful for you and your ministry. Again, let's continue this conversation online. All right, heroes. Well, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate you joining the podcast today. If you enjoyed it, go to Spotify or iTunes and subscribe to it, or go to ymsidekick.com. There we've got the blog, the podcast, the vlog. I've got the Twitter ebook. I've got the stuff on Digital Bootcamp. We would love for you to be a part of all that stuff. So just hit that up at ymsidekick.com. All right, heroes. Well, I hope you have a great rest of the day, a great rest of the week. And until next time, have a great one.